money, particularly on waters, but also on arts, anything. Is there someone who would like to say something about either the arts and cultural heritage or the clean water? Or yes.
Good evening, Madam Chair. Yes. Thank you and members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. My name is Hector Garcia, Executive Director of the Chicano Latino Affairs Council of Minnesota.
I think you might have a cell phone on or something that makes it make noises like that.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, committees, members of the committee, my name is Sia Herr, and I am the new executive director over at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Thank you for the opportunity to be here before all of you.
I'd like to bring to your attention the very significant importance of the Legacy Fund to the fulfillment of our mandate in the Chicano Latino First Council. I am convinced that the disparities which afflict our community have a great deal to do with culture and communications between the culture of poverty and the culture of affluence. And if there is a problem with communication, it'll be very difficult to come to cooperation, which is the only way in which these huge disparities will disappear. We have been doing what I believe is very important work on addressing some of the obstacles to that communication. For instance, there's very little awareness of what our community is. There is a pretty superficial and one type of perception of our community that does not allow for an understanding that a large segment of our population make significant contributions to Minnesota. So the full spectrum of who we are is not perceived, so judgments are made on the basis of that selective perception of our community. So we have been re-imaging the Latino community for the benefit of the schools primarily, for educators, for students, very important to the self-image of our students, so that they can begin to improve their performance and reduce the achievement gap and improve graduation rates. So we're doing a lot of that type of work, and I want to convey that it's not purely art, culture, but that it will have a very significant economic impact on the state.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, members of the committee, again, I'm the Executive Director of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and this is a state agency that represents individuals and groups from well over 42 countries that we know as Asia, east of Pakistan and Afghanistan, all the way to Japan, including the Samoan Islands and the Pacific and the Hawaiian states. Since this is a legacy conference committee, I'm just going to speak very briefly to that topic. I'm 2 months into my position as executive director, and in the short time that I've been on board, I've seen some of the work that was produced with the legacy funds, and they're tremendous pieces of work. The Asian American community is a very, very diverse community. As such, we come from many cultural and religious backgrounds. And so this money has allowed the council to work in partnership with the Minnesota Humanities Center on projects that neither one of us individually could have done alone. For example, we have the Reading Together Project. And the Reading Together Project in the last biennium produced 2 books. Those 2 books were meant to address the lack of books out there reflecting the Asian American reflecting the Minnesotan child of Asian descent. We distributed these books to public schools in the metro area as well as in other areas of the state. And what we found was that kids love these books. In these books, they saw themselves and their life experiences as Minnesotans reflected, and that's critical for our community. And so as a state agency that was created to advise the governor and the legislature, to advocate on behalf of the Asian American community, and then, of course, to build bridges between various communities, these books help to fulfill that mission as well as to support and preserve cultural values and beliefs. So again, thank you for the opportunity to be here before you to talk about how critical this legacy funding has been for the councils, and in particular the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans.
Okay. If you end up getting the same money and it's in the state government finance bill instead of the legacy bill, does that make any difference to you?
I think it does. Personally, I feel that this is a pot of money that all Minnesotans pay into, and as such, it comes with a very different goal, mission attached to it than the mission that's attached to our general revenue. And so the work that we've done with this funding is very, very different from the work that we would do with the general, with the state revenue dollars.
Could you explain how it would be different?
Right. So,
amount, and that would come not with the strings that these regular appropriation does.
Right.
But.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, members of the committee, let me try to answer your question with a very specific example of some of the work that we've done. So last year, we funded a project called the Artist Fellowship. And this fellowship consisted of 10 artists from the Asian American community. Each of them focused on a project. And one of the projects that one of the artists worked on was called Nomad. And in this project, the question posed was, what do you carry in your suitcase in this journey of coming to America and defining and redefining home here in Minnesota? And so this was a four-panel art exhibit. And one of the stories that was shared through this project was the story of a couple from Burma, the Karen. I don't know how many of you in here are familiar with the Karen, but it is an ethnic minority group from Burma, and Minnesota is home to the fifth largest Burmese population. These are refugees. So the story of this couple that was exhibited in this art project was the story of how this couple, the suitcase that they brought to America, is not yours or my idea of a suitcase. It is, in fact, a little basket made of bamboo. And the story they shared was that the Burmese soldiers came into their village and killed off most of the villagers, and they fled into the jungle. They lived in the jungle for well over a decade, and in this little basket that they kept by the front door, the only door to their hut, contained a few pieces of essential tools. And they would say to themselves every night before they went to bed that if they got any inkling of Burmese soldiers, that they would flee and they would take this basket with them because they needed this basket and what it contained in order to survive in the jungle. And so in their story, they talked not just about these physical artifacts in this basket, but they talked about the hopes and the dreams that this basket contained for them. And so in coming to America, that story is powerful because the beauty of America is that we give people reason to hope for a better tomorrow. And this kind of story wouldn't have been shared. We would have never seen heard this story had we just looked at this couple. They can't speak any English. And the way the husband talked about his experience was, this story is significant to him because upon arrival in America, he felt that his tongue had been cut off, that his eyes had been poked out, and that he had been reduced to nothing. But when we asked him to share his story with us, he talked about the human being that he was before coming to America. And he talked about the hopes and dreams that he carried that no one else can see unless we find a way to hold his hands and help him find the dignity and the humanity within him to share that story. And this is the beauty of the work that we do with the Legacy Funds. And so, no, we can't do this work with our state revenue. This project that I just shared with you sounds very simple, but it took a whole lot of work and a whole lot of relationship building in order to develop this trust between the artist and the couple that shared the story.
Madam Chair, I'd like to comment a little bit on what we are doing and members of the committee. What we have done is focus on education primarily because that is the core of the disparities among our community. And we have done a great deal of research. We think we have come up with very innovative programs that we're implementing with the Humanities Center at Humboldt High School, and also in an unlikely school, which is Northfield, which is highly successful, where they've taken the graduation rate of Latinos from 35% to 90% in 6 years. So we're giving it a very educational, functional use. And I think with the growing population in the Latino community, which, as you probably know, grew by 75% between 2000 and 2010, the state simply cannot afford to not focus sufficient resources on improving the education of Latino students. So we intend on continuing to use the legacy funds for this purpose, and to add to that, our own resources from the state appropriation.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen and members of the committee, may I just add one more piece? Because I want to make it very clear that we can't do these projects that we've been doing with the legacy funds with the state revenue dollars. We can't, simply because the state revenue dollars we're using that to conduct, to do research, to also go into the various into the API community that live in all of the 87 counties of Minnesota. We can't advise you. We can't advise the governor. We can't advocate on our behalf of our community if we're not in our communities hearing them talk about the issues of their days in a manner that is meaningful to them. And so my budget is fairly small. It's $245,000. I have 3.25 staff members. This is a community of 253,000 Asian Americans who live in every one of the 87 counties throughout the state of Minnesota. I need every one of those dollars from the state revenue to do that work. And so
the question I had asked, though, was that if this additional money was given, but it was given in the general fund appropriation instead of as a legacy fund appropriation, right, did it make any difference? We were not saying that you would use your existing appropriation to do this work.
No.
Okay.
We're not using our existing appropriation to do this work. This work is very culturally oriented.
Yes. But the question was, did the source of funding matter if there was extra funding being given to the agency?
The answer is yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. I'm still not sure I've understood why.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I may, I'd like to comment that what I was trying to convey earlier is the significance of our limited resources and the challenges that we face with a population that's 40% immigrants who come from a very impoverished background and very little education. There's a vital need to improve communication so that that community and the majority community can cooperate in order to solve the problems we all share. And obviously, the grants that we receive from the Humanities Center have helped us a great deal. Now, if that money were replaced by the appropriation funds, as the Senate has suggested, to $400,000, there would probably be a greater degree of reliance and confidence in the availability of those funds because they've been appropriated to us. But what I was trying to say is that hopefully this committee will allow for the possibility of adding the legacy fund even to the increase that the Senate is considering because of the huge need that we have for the funds. You know, $275,000 to cover the state of Minnesota, where this magnitude of problems exist, is insufficient.
Well, we understand that, but we do have the problems of limited sources of funds that we have. Yes. So, okay. Anyone else have any questions? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee, Madam Chair. Pleasure.
Yep. Right. Yes. Okay. Now, I was reminded that we're doing all of the clean water tomorrow, so I guess we would like anyone who still wants to testify on the either the Outdoor Heritage Council or the Arts and Cultural Heritage budget. Anyone has any comments on either of those?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
And Senator Cohen. My name is John Toom. I'm here on behalf of Conservation Minnesota. We are a advocacy organization that turns Minnesota's love of the great outdoors into effective policies. And we also provide reliable information to you as regards to decisions you have to make on our state funding for the great outdoors. We are a member association. We do not receive any state money or legacy money. We are not here with our hands out asking you for anything. We advocate for the appropriate use of the legacy dollars so that they are for the purposes they're intended to and they don't supplant or, as we always talk about, they must go to supplementing traditional sources of funding. For the last 12 years, we have been tracking the funding in the environment area and in investments to our great outdoors. I will not, as I promised you, give you my creation story of how the legacy came to be and how where I was sitting when the decision was made. That's, I think, irrelevant. We are looking to the future. And one of the things that we have been doing as kind of the watchdog is to do a report identifying some of the areas where we have some concerns. And as we look at where this legacy budget is sitting with a couple areas we just wanted to touch base with you on. First is the Lessard-Sams Council. We as an organization believe that Lessard-Sams Council is not some sort of untouchable thing that the legislature shouldn't look at, but we do think that it is important to give them the benefit of the doubt. As a lawyer, we know that sometimes there's higher standards that we have to meet in order to prove something. And we think that is the case for Lessard-Sams, is that you should give them a great deal of deference. You should give them a high level of deference in the sense that you shouldn't just undo what they do without being very careful to look at it, the work that they've done. We believe they've done an excellent job in the past, even though there have been changes. We think they've done an excellent job, and we think that's the case this session, that the Lessard-Sams Council did a good job and that there really is no reason to undo their existing appropriations, which you did, Madam Chair. We appreciate that and we recognize that. But that also leads to the conclusion that we think you should not shortchange the work that they do or short-circuit their future work. And so we would ask you to honor the council's annual appropriation. We're not necessarily saying annual appropriation or non-annual appropriation is a good idea, but in a sense, the way the budget was done in the House, you essentially short-circuited their opportunity to continue to do the good work that they have done in the past, and we would ask that you would honor that going forward. The last point we would like to make is on the House groundwater proposals. Basically, the simple answer to that, House good, Senate bad, I guess is make it simple for you. We think that the House has taken the dollars and used them in a way that is enhancing the activities that the DNR and the PCA and the health folks have been doing. In some ways, when you combine the Senate's budget and the Senate's legacy proposal, we think you're starting to walk into the area that could essentially be supplanting, in the sense that the legacy dollars being appropriated by the Senate seem to be asking the DNR to do activities we think that they should be doing already under their existing funding. We think the governor recognized that by asking for an appropriation that is supported by some additional fees, which we strongly support. And so we know at the end of this game, those two budgets start to get commingled to make things happen correctly, and that we support where the House has essentially segregated those and the way they use the dollars here in the legacy bill. With that, Madam Chair, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you.
Mr.
Senator Cook.
Madam Chair, Mr. Tuma, thanks for the kind words. Let me just...
I did like your Lessard proposal.
So, let me just ask, though, your basic objection is the utilization of clean water money in lieu of the fees in the House Environment Bill. Is that... Actually, I've heard from a number of people about that, but is that your basic objection to the Senate clean water proposal?
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, exactly.
And Madam Chair, so your objection is a question of does this supplant what ought to be done out of general fund in some form?
Yes.
Let me ask one further question. Obviously, Senator Thomasoni would be much more involved with this in his conference committee, as everybody would understands. In terms of your concern, is there a concern of fees versus general fund dollars?
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen and Senator Thomasoni, the answer is no. The big deal for us is the money needs to be green and it needs to be going towards some of these, I think, demands that we're seeing, new demands, particularly in the groundwater area. So if the target is sufficient to cover those fees, and that in the overall all-fund appropriation, which I would have to say the Senate has been a little low on when you look at all funds compared to the governor and the House, then we're okay, so long as we look at it and you're getting pretty close to parity of where the governor and the House was in their initial proposal in the environment and natural resources area.
So Madam Chair and Mr. Tuma, just finally, relative to your use of adjectives, If that issue was put aside, you'd suggest the Senate position is spectacular, very good, excellent. How would you then characterize the Senate proposal?
You know, those words I can even understand, Mr. Chairman. So, yes, I would say yes.
Any other questions? Okay. Anyone else?
Madam Chair, committee members, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. My name is Tim Spreck. I am president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. Our organization, most of you are familiar with, we represent close to 400,000 sportsmen in the state of Minnesota through our 68 member groups. And I come to you tonight with full support of our board who have spoken very carefully and in depth regarding the bill before us this evening. Our position is very simple. We would like to thank Representative Kahn for her work, and we've had some dialogue in the past about some particular issues with regard to this bill, but our position for MOHA is that we're here to support the Senate position. We find that in scrutinizing the two different options at the Senate position more greatly reflects our goals for the state of Minnesota with regard to the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Lessard Sam's dollars. So my comments will be very brief. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Yes, I'm interested. Do you really oppose the extra funding that the House has put in for aquatic invasive species? You really think that we could just
It's not about opposing funding. It's about making sure that we're adhering to the plan as it was laid out and approved by the voters. The funding is wonderful. Don't get me wrong. Okay. We'd love to see aquatic invasive species handled in a timely manner, but we also want to make sure that it's done, that all the projects are vetted properly through the council. And I think you maybe are referring to some of the appropriations for the second year in your particular version, and we want to make sure that it's done properly. And if that is what you're alluding to, I think if a two-year biennium funding cycle is something that makes sense moving forward, we'd like to see it implemented over a period of time and vetted properly through the council.
Well, in some sense, if we've used all the money in one year and we want to start out doing something else, the only place to put it is in the second year. In terms of being able, one can do addition. The last thing that we've done is we haven't moved to a biennial cycle until the next biennium, and that's something that can be done separately with whether there's any funding in the second year of this year. Now, let me ask you a question about the past. Mm-hmm. In the past, the Outdoor Heritage Council did not recommend any funding to counter emerald ash borer, and the House actually put that in. It was funded by the Outdoor Heritage Council, but it was funded, very much the way some of the funding is done now. It was funded despite their recommendation not to fund it. Do you think that was a bad decision years ago?
I'm sorry. Madam Chair, the way I understand that is that was an emerging issue that came about that was funded through the legislature. And it's not my particular area of expertise. So the way I understand it is that it came about as an emerging issue, and I think that the fact that we took a serious look at that was very important. I'm not willing to comment whether or not it was good policy, bad policy, because it's not my area of expertise.
Thank you. Okay. Senator Cole.
Madam Chair, Mr. Sprague, let me ask on a different area. What about this issue of metro proposals versus non-metro proposals in regard to the council's work?
Well, obviously, as a hunting and fishing advocacy group, our main objective is to make sure that funding that's done through the council would be open to hunting and fishing. Now, we understand that there's some problems with that within the metro area. I think that the main reason that we're having trouble with the funding of the metro parks is sort of twofold. There is a parks fund. And the other piece of this discussion is that we feel that those particular funds were not approved by the council, and therefore it's viewed by some as a sort of a workaround to get around the council. And whether or not that those projects are wonderful is not the issue. The issue is that we want to make sure that the integrity of the council is preserved at all costs. It was something that sportsmen and women in particular fought desperately for as a precursor to the passing of the Legacy Amendment, and we don't want to allow anything to undermine the authority of the council with regard to the recommendations that they make moving forward.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Sprick, I'm sorry, but I apologize because my question wasn't relative to the integrity of the council, and I think the commissioner, when he testified, certainly offered that rationale in terms of the history and what led to the establishment of the council. So my question is a little bit different. Given what MOHA has done over the years relative to the promotion not just simply of the sports themselves, hunting and fishing, but in terms of the conservation, habitat preservation, and so on. Is it appropriate at some point, and I'm not sure what the hypothetical is, well, maybe it's, you know, we had Senator Roebling's testimony relative to outlying metro areas where there is significant habitat. Is it appropriate to look at something like that? And I'm not asking you in the context of the council's work this past year, but just as a general matter from your perspective as somebody involved with hunting and fishing.
Well, I think moving forward, it would be something that I would like to see the council make some kind of a determination on it on a case-by-case basis. I don't want to make a blanket statement here that we would support or not support. But I think we would look at the council, see what their thoughts are on any particular projects moving forward, and then if they green light them, then I think we would feel more comfortable talking about them.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. I don't want any misunderstanding. I think, Madam Chair, you and I do not want to see pheasant hunting in our districts.
Right.
That would be a bad idea.
Even if it's an invasive species.
Yeah.
Fucked up.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, Representative Fry.
Just a quick question. Do you feel the amendment should be, you mentioned hunting and fishing, do you feel the amendment should be limited to just hunting and fishing?
You mean with regard to the Lessard-Sams appropriations?
Yeah, with regard to the outdoor heritage portion.
Obviously, that's our primary focus. That's what our group is focused on, advocacy and rights for sportsmen and women throughout the state of Minnesota. We understand that there's appropriate habitat quality pieces that are involved in the bigger picture.
Okay, I'm just looking again. I'm glad you put the constitutional language here because it does talk about enhancing wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. So, there's a few pieces there. You also mentioned that you felt the will of the voters should be reflected. Is the council itself, was that part of the constitutional amendment?
The council, for our constituency group, the council was the most important piece. If it wasn't a council, the sportsmen and women of Minnesota would not have been able to support the amendment the way that we did. So for us, that's the golden goose. That's the most important aspect of what we're doing, and it's what keeps this process pure and headed in the right direction.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cole.
Just a comment, and not directly in response to Representative Freiberg, but maybe from a Senate perspective, and maybe because obviously I'm not sure if Senator Thomasoni and Senator Ingebrigtsen served with Senator Lessard. I think Senator Thomasoni, you did for a couple of years here in the Senate. But my understanding from Senator Lessard in terms of his intent that certainly the primary focus, if not 100% of the focus, was habitat preservation for, I think the explicit reason, as he explained it to me, that habitat was disappearing and that there was increasingly an inability in the state for hunters and fishermen to find places to go, that pheasant hunting was kind of drifting west to South Dakota, for instance. I don't know, Mr. Sprague, if that's incorrect. Just simple summary of what I understood Senator Lessard's original proposal to be in the latter part of the 90s, but that was my sense of what I got from him.
Is there any? Is that a comment? Okay.
I would say that sounds accurate.
Okay. Yes. Representative Roy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The word pure that you used struck me. Could you say a little bit more about what you mean by keeping the process pure?
He's reading these, like protect well, against weapons, prairies, and forests, and habitat, and then he's stopping there.
I guess the word pure means that there's a council that's comprised not only of legislators, sportsmen and women, and appointees from various sources that get together, and they have a very rigorous process, as Mr. Becker outlined earlier. Things are vetted properly, scientifically, and with excellent detail and attention to the broader goal, which is to provide additional opportunity for sportsmen and women in the state of Minnesota, whether that be for opportunity to actually practice hunting and fishing or to provide the habitat that that our wildlife needs so that we can pursue our goals. So for us, the council is the barometer, if you will. Controls how things move forward, has an excellent process for making sure that the recommendations that come through the council have been properly vetted, and that we keep the arrow pointed straightforward on what's most important without outside interests taking over and finding ways to weasel in and get their hands on that money, because it's a beautiful fund, and it is dedicated to providing the kind of opportunity that we want to see for the people of Minnesota, and that we all voted to support for it.
Could I just? I respect that. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think from my perspective, the legislature plays a role in that as well, and because we are supposed to appropriate funds, but also we do take a second look. We have public testimony. We have other ways of adding to that total picture of what's going on. So, I think it has proven that we can work together. Sometimes changes get made, and I don't think necessarily, maybe you didn't mean to imply this, but I don't think necessarily the legislature looking at this makes it impure.
No, and that wasn't my objective. My objective is to make it pure. The legislature obviously has final jurisdiction over what happens. So the council comes with what we consider to be pure recommendations based on their process. And then the legislature has the opportunity to determine if they want to do some tweaking or if there's some additional things that have arisen that need to be looked at. For instance, the Umbral Ash Borer situation that we discussed earlier. But I guess what we're here tonight to do is to support the Senate position. Obviously, you all have the ability to take that, look at it, and determine what you're going to do. I'm not going to be able to change what you folks are doing, but we're here to support the Senate position tonight, and hopefully that would be something that you would find to be acceptable or important on behalf of our constituency base. But obviously you have the final say in what happens.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to say anything on either the arts, culture, history, or the outdoor heritage section? Okay. Well, the next, have we given these out to everyone? Okay. Do we also have ones out for the general public? Did we? Oh, we didn't do that. Okay. Well,
I don't even see that guy here.
Try and get. Okay. This is, we've had. Both our staffs have been working together on the items in the bill, and this follows right along the spreadsheet. We didn't on the items that are the same or similar, and we wondered if we could get through that. No, Michael. Where did Michael go? What?
They don't believe us.
Nearly.
First outdoor heritage.
Well,
these are just the amounts, and in the outdoor heritage, the language is just the same, I think, because we took it from that. So we started with the Accelerating Wildlife Management Area Program, then the Prairie Recovery Project, the Buffers for Wildlife and Water, Cannon River Headwaters Habitat Complex, then the forests, Young Forest Conservation, Camp Ripley Partnership, Northeastern Minnesota Sharp-tailed Grouse Habitat, Protect Forest Land in Cass County, Critical Shoreline Habitat Protection, Minnesota Moose Habitat, and then into the wetlands, the Accelerating the Waterfowl Protection Area, Living Shallow Lakes and Wetlands, Wild Rice Shoreland Protection, Wetland Habitat Protection Program, Pelican Lake Enhancement. That was similar, the House, since we put some things into a second year, put $1 million in fiscal year 15 in that appropriation. In the habitat, aquatic habitat, phase 5, and Dakota County habitat, both of those are similar, but the House put part of it in the second fiscal year. Landscape arboretum is the same. Shell Rock River habitat and water restoration is the same. The administration, similar, the House put additional administration money into fiscal year 15. That's like administration expenses and compensation, technical assistance, and pre-transaction service administration is the same. The payment conditions and capital equipment expenditures are the same. Mapping is the same. Appropriation carry forward fee title acquisition is the same. On the Conservation Corps is different. On that one, I think we have language urging use of the Conservation Corps whenever possible for these projects. Any thoughts or?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen?
Okay, yeah. Why don't you? I know Mr. Pomeroy and Ms. Kaplan did a very good job in putting this together. I do want, hopefully, Ms. Doyle Fontaine and maybe Ms. Roberts have had an opportunity to glance at this to make sure that it comports with the work they've done. I would have no objection moving the same language. Obviously, I would put aside looking at the outdoor heritage section, the language that's similar because it gets into the appropriation second of the language.
Yep. You know, if there's any, you know, obviously all our staff will be vetting this again and again, but
Madam Chair, was your intent to take some action?
Yeah, I would. Tonight? I would like to adopt the ones that are the same.
Okay. Well, then I want to make sure, Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair and members, I think the same ones that are shown on here. I've been looking through those and double checking it. I think that looks fine. The similar though, many times the House has got the same amount of dollars, but it's just in the second year, and you wouldn't do those, so it'd be just the same.
Yes. And there's one thing which I hope, because I think one that we had, I would hope you could agree with, is the language that we have on the Conservation Corps. Michael, what?
No, I'm sorry, go ahead, Madam Chair.
What page? Where do we go to that?
Page R26. Madam Chair, it's page R26.
R26. Okay, thank you.
Well, Madam Chair, let me suggest, does Roberts agree?
This isn't her part of the bill.
I'm sorry.
She's
in.
Okay. We have Janelle. Ms. Taylor.
So, wasn't sure who was doing which, so I apologize, Ms.
They've
Taylor.
Kind of all worked together.
I should know my staff better. I apologize.
No,
Okay, Ms. Taylor.
Madam Chair, I do concur with Mr. Knopf. The sames that are listed appear to be identical.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, I would move the same language, where it says same. Yeah. I would move adoption of that language. I would put aside, because I have a couple questions about the Conservation Corps piece.
Okay. Okay. So, is there any questions or discussion about the things that say the same in this section? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes. Okay. So, opposed.
So, Madam Chair, before we move on to Parks and Trails, then can I just inquire about the Conservation Corps?
Okay.
The language the House has says must give consideration. What's the difference?
Well, must and possible is...
as opposed to may give consideration. Madam Chair,
I don't know. when it is must give consideration for possible use, it's kind of like a little stronger than may, is that we really want them to do it, but they clearly don't have to use it.
Okay, well, that's definitive. That's really definitive. Could I just inquire? Obviously, we've had Madam Chair, a lot of discussion about the Lessard Council. I don't know if this was something discussed by the council on. I don't see Representative Lilly, but maybe I could inquire of Senator Saxhog and Senator Ingebrigtsen as to what they think, if that's okay, because they're on the council.
Yeah.
Again, I don't see Representative Lilly. I don't believe.
He's at a graduation. He'll be here when he finishes. About using the language about asking the Conservation Corps to participate in the Lessard Sands projects. Use of the Conservation
Corps. We do. I don't know if it's must or
not. Oh. Sorry. What?
I think shall would be better.
It's just been pointed out to me, actually, that this language is in statute. Is it exactly like this? Oh. Maybe strong. A recipient of money appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage, this is statute, must give consideration to and make timely written contact with the Conservation Corps. This is actually stronger language and more specific language.
And it's presently in statute?
That's in statute.
So I suppose we should move deletion of subdivision 11.
We should not do the... Yeah, that's... yeah, right. We'll take the Senate position on subdivision 11.
We'll take the Senate position on subdivision 11.
Okay.
That's not included.
It's good to have people around to point those things out.
Exactly.
Thanks to Mr. Becker, we learned that. Okay. All right. So, we get to the Conservation Corps again in Parks and Trails. Okay.
Well, let's...
Okay.
I would suggest maybe just rather than mix and match, let's finish the adoption of language in the first article.
We did do that.
Well, I don't think we voted on it. I motion to adopt the Senate.
Oh, on the Conservation Corps. Okay. I just crossed that.
Yeah.
All those in favor adopting the Senate position on the Conservation Corps, say aye.
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 Opposed. Motion passes. Okay. Now, Parks and Trails, I think I'd like to just, again, there are things that are similar. There are things that are, again, in the Conservation Corps, we put an extra $500,000 into the amount done by the Conservation Corps. I don't know. We had discussions with them, and the $1 million, I think, was acceptable to both the agencies and to the Conservation Corps. They thought that was a reasonable goal. Vision Corps. There's a, yes. No, go ahead.
Did you see this as a folder?
Yes, I do. I did remember seeing that.
But I had taken mine, but I can't.
No, no, no.
So what, Madam Chair, what page is the House language?
What page is that?
Madam Chair, R7 of Article 3.
So we're in Article, this is Article 3.
Okay.
For the,
all right, got it. Line 26. 7126. Madam Chair, I'd like to suggest, I don't think there's obviously not language difference.
There's an amount of difference.
Yeah, I would like to explore a little bit more, and I don't know if former Senator Price is here somewhere.
He's here. Did send a letter, which I had,
yeah.
And I don't think I brought with me.
I guess I would like
okay.
to inquire of Mr. Price before we simply adopt one position or the other.
Okay.
So if that would be okay.
Sure.
Is that too much? Is it milking too much?
The other point in, sure, we'll just set that aside.
Okay.
Legislative coordinating with commission website. Again, it's similar. Which way does the difference go there?
Madam Chair, you'll find that on R15, A3. The House has $5,000 each year. The Senate has $7,000 the first year and $6,000 the second.
Well, Madam Chair, in an effort maybe to make a little bit of progress, I would move the House position on the website and the Senate position on Section 6, University of Minnesota.
Well, why did you have the additional money in for the website? Did you have some... You did it. Yours was done later than ours, so I wonder if you had some different information.
Mr. Chair, my understanding, Mr. Mueller is here, can speak to it, but in my discussions with Mr. Mueller about the spread of the money was that Mr. Hubinger was looking for a certain amount of money, and the House seemed to have – he thought that the Senate allocation was a better allocation as far as kind of a fair between all of the funds based on the amount of money that they have and the amount of projects and that sort of thing. But I'll let Mr. Mueller speak for himself since he's here now.
Madam Chair and members, I talked – the LCC was basing their spread. They were spreading it between the four funds here and the Environmental Trust Fund through the LCCMR. And they were basing it off of kind of wrong numbers. So this is a more equal distribution based on the actual appropriations.
Mr. Hubinger is here, so maybe he can give us a – there you are. To look far back.
What's the University of Minnesota?
Thank you. Okay. Yes, Mr. Hubinger.
Oh, Madam Chair and members, Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Mr. Mueller had it exactly correct. We had an incorrect calculation of the spread across the funds, and he caught that error and corrected it for the Senate allocations.
Well, I guess I would like to amend your motion to accept the Senate position on both of them.
I
guess Madam Chair, I couldn't object to that.
I figured if you had done it later. I don't usually think the Senate is righter, but if you – I knew
writer?
You did – righter, right, more right. But if
which,
you did
– Which Ivy League school did you go to?
Oh, almost all of them. But I never had anything that taught basic grammar in English. But the I figured that you probably – anyway, Mr. Hubinger, why don't you explain why you need the Senate position on them?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Website.
We had suggested three scenarios for funding for the website, and the approach by the legislature is to fund it at the higher level at the $100,000. I had just simply allocated the shares across the funds incorrectly, and Mr. Mueller caught that by the time it got to the Senate.
Okay. So,
Madam Chair, let me restate your amendment, your amended amendment, which would be to accept Senate language relative to the website and Senate language relative to the University of Minnesota.
Yes, that's on R16.
Yes.
Yes. That was someone I actually think was kind of an inadvertent omission from the House bill. So, everyone understand where that is, R16, so the language.
Well, Madam Chair, it begins on R15 at the bottom, Section
right.
6, University of Minnesota, and the Senate language then continues on page R16.
Yes. 17. Okay.
17.
And R17.
And R17.
Okay. Everyone see what that is? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay.
Took this too.
No. The next one, we get to the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission. And there were a couple of differences between them. The Senate has the appointments in the first meeting, and the first meeting language, the number of districts. I think the House districts are better. The Senate districts use these DNR districts, of which weren't the best. For example, one district of the six districts, one of them spread across the entire bottom of the state from the northwestern corner to the, I'm sorry, from the southwestern corner to the southeastern corner. And you were dealing with very different regional habitats there.
Madam Chair, I apologize for interrupting. Let's make sure that he's got the right page, R20. And at least relative to the sections, Senator Tomasoni was the Senate author of the legislation. I don't know who the House author
Representative Metza.
Okay. So he's not here.
We could get him here at some point. So this is on R19. Wait a minute. I guess the first thing we do is we add the member of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission to the list of this long list of people who are defined as public officials. Yes.
Some of the people from the.
Sure. What?
From the Parks and Trails can
okay.
know about this, the comments on.
Right. Okay, thank you. Yep.
Al Lifford with Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails
Chair Kahn and Senator Cohen, we would, the language regarding public officials is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
But we think that would be fine. But I would make a comment about the districts, if that's the right time to do that now.
Yes.
We don't feel that the four DNR districts or that the 12 districts, either one of those is correct. I think that the Senate language outlines that the commissioner will work with a group of people from the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trails Coalition to establish six new districts and two representatives from each district. And we feel that's probably a more workable number than 12 districts. We think that we can. The biggest problem with the four DNR districts is that two big problems. One is that the central region included both the area west of the metropolitan area and the area southeast. That doesn't work very well functionally. And the large southern district probably needs to be broken up a little bit. It went across the whole southern tier of the state except for some counties along the Mississippi River. So we think that we should reorganize that, but that we can work with the commissioner's office to do that, and that the Senate language allows that.
What is the reason for having six districts instead of 12 districts?
The reason that we prefer six districts is that it gives us a chance to work. Well, it just seems more manageable than having 12 districts, Madam Chair, to us. That six seemed adequate, where we would have two representatives from each district and one at-large member. Giving us a number of 13 that we would be able to avoid ties and that sort of thing as we discussed regional planning.
Okay. Well, that's, I probably should have been asking you to go through this instead of trying to do it. So why don't you continue? I think that explains. Why don't you continue going through this section? Senator Tomasoni?
Potentially. I think the Senate file was heard after the House file was. And
correct.
I think what happened was people saw what went through the House and tried to make some changes to make the commission more manageable and the language more manageable. So it's possible that the Senate language is something that...
I think we are probably going to go to that, but let's get through the whole thing. Because there's something... There's one other thing that I have a little... Well, all right. Let's keep going. Ms. Taylor?
Madam Chair, would you like me to just point out all the differences from the beginning?
Yes.
Well, then we would go to R17. As the Chair mentioned, on the House side, the members of the commission would be added to the list of public officials. And you'll see that on line 80.16 on the bottom of R18. And then if you skip ahead.
And we probably need that. We probably do need that.
The effect of that is to make them subject to the open meeting law, I assume. And
Madam Chair, it's not necessarily the open meeting law. It means that they have to file reports the same way that legislators and staff in our office do. Yeah.
Okay.
And then on R20, as we've just discussed, the difference in membership, 12 versus 13, and then the districts having two members from the six districts on the Senate side and one member each from the 12 districts on the House side. And then you also see subdivisions 3 and subdivision 4 on the Senate side. They provide a description of how the first appointments would be made in the first meeting. And then if you on subdivision 3 on the House side, subdivision 5 on the Senate side, the only difference there in paragraph A is the 6 versus 12 regions. And then on paragraph B, you'll see some additional language on the Senate side on lines 41.26 through 41.28 that said district-wide plans and master plans for individual parks and trails must meet the protocols and criteria set forth in the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Strategic Plan. And then on the bottom of R20, you'll see subdivision 4 on the house side. This provides some criteria for what is regional significant. And if you move to R21, recommendation subdivision 5 and subdivision 6 on the Senate side, you'll see that on the House side, there's some clarification of when the commission would submit the recommendations. They'd be biennial recommendations that would be submitted to the legislature. And then you'll also see some additional language on 83.8 and 83.9 that the grant request offering a non-state match of at least 25% of the cost would be preferred. And then on lines 83.13 and 83.14, there's some additional language that grants may be recommended only for trails that connect or will connect to existing state or regional trails. And then there's a subdivision 6 on the bottom of that page that requires the DNR to provide administrative support for the commission. And then skipping ahead on to R22, the chair meetings, conflict of interest, and definitions. Subdivisions are the same, but on the Senate side, you'll see there's an additional report requirement, and then here you'll see that that's how they would do their recommendations, through a report. And then you'll see a sunset of the commission of January 1st, 2020, and an immediate effective date as well.
Okay, the House side has different criteria for the recommendations. And we also, I think, is there an also difference? Yes, we have going from at R20, we have a set of, we have discussions of regional significance, which was kind of based on the language that was it's partially based on the language that we have in talking about metropolitan significance. Why did the Senate decide to?
Madam Chair, maybe Senator Thomas, somebody could speak to that too. But my understanding, though, is this language is not necessarily in statute for the metropolitan parks. It's something that's part of their plan.
Except that that's been established, you know. But it's been established. I mean, there is no yet official group for this.
For Metro Parks.
Well, Madam Chair,
yeah.
The Senate, their Thomasoni didn't want to, I mean, again, I can speak, but this is not included in here. It is my understanding is that the Metropolitan Parks are developed by the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission, the criteria, and the Senate version is to leave that up to the this new commission to create the criteria for that and not to put it into law, similar to the Metropolitan Parks.
Well, okay. Does it say that anywhere? It says consistent. One of the problems I also have is I believe this reference to the as set forth in the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Strategic Plan. That was the plan that was given to us. We had a lot of problems with that. Because, for one thing, it ended up with 130 parks of regional significance in that. I think it needed a lot more work before we accepted that. There were very, very small parks that were considered to be the equivalent of.
Madam Chair, it was just my understanding on the Senate side that they're continuing to work through that. In fact, there's money in this bill for them to continue that planning process, and that was what the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails people were looking for, and Senator Thomasoni obliged.
I think the problem that we had with that is that that was submitted and that really wasn't, you know, and we didn't, we thought it started out okay when it was talking about the ones that were really significant, but it, I worry a little bit about putting something that we really objected to the content in statute, you know, saying that we'll follow it. We really wanted this new council to do that.
Set their own criteria.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why we didn't include that criteria here. One of the things I understood about the metropolitan area, the regional parks here, was that there are so many different parks that it potentially would be way too many of them asking for money. And so the people of the metropolitan area decided to set up some barriers from certain parks from being eligible for funding. And it doesn't seem to be the same animal in rural Minnesota, and so that limiting some of these things to some of these criteria may not work as well in Minnesota as it does in the metropolitan area. And so we thought that if we're setting up a commission to make these determinations, they can decide on their own who would qualify and who wouldn't.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Maybe we could have maybe we could have Mr. Lieffert come forward again and make some comments with regards to this and give his point of view. Is this a work in progress?
Yeah. Certainly. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen and Thomasoni and Chair Kahn and Senator Cohen. There is clear language in the authorization of the Metropolitan Council Regional Park and Open Space Planning that requires them to produce a policy plan. The Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Strategic Plan is not the same thing, and it has not been adopted by the legislature or by this commission, which hasn't even been created yet, so obviously it hasn't been adopted by them.
Okay, well, I think we need some language that says that the job of this commission is to create. Okay.
And I think
we
the
need
language
to probably work with the, that the job of this commission that we're setting up, and I think I'm agreeing with your idea of the two members, six and the two members. When I saw the six, I thought it was the same as those DNR ones that made no sense.
The need for a policy plan, though, and a plan to create the system plan that will become the system planning and provide recommendations to the legislature for grants. I mean, that is, it is hoped that the commission, once created, will look at the policy, the strategic plan that we built with the 175 study, and either adopt it or modify it.
Okay, I thought
think that
this
it should
was the 175 study for some reason, so that's my mistake. Well, I think we need to say, the language we need is we need to say that that commission will develop a Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails strategic plan. But
we agree with that. I think, though, that it is something of a misconception to state that the 130 parks that were identified by the University of Minnesota's inventory as potentially regional, that is no part of the strategic plan, and it is clear that there are not 130 regional parks in Greater Minnesota.
Okay. Well, I guess I think we're not ready to quite adopt this. I would like to have, I understand some of what Senator Thomasoni said about maybe these, the percentage of visitors and so forth, but I really think that these criteria ought to go for the outstate. I mean, just looking at the criteria that are in the House bill, that a park must provide a natural resource-based setting and provide outdoor recreation facilities and multiple. No, I think that all those criteria ought to be there in the statute, even if they came from the Metropolitan Council's planning.
I'd get rid of 2 o'clock.
If the specific numbers don't work for the non-metro areas, then, you know, maybe we could just take those out. But I think we really do need to make a distinction. I mean, we clearly did that in the Metropolitan Council of Meta, that we didn't want to ever get into funding little neighborhood parks and things like that.
Madam Chair, that's one of the reasons maybe in the Senate side you need some additional language on developing a strategic plan. But if you look at the additional language that Ms. Taylor mentioned earlier, where it says district-wide plans and master plans for individual parks must meet the protocols and criteria set forth in the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Strategic Plan. So it's assumed that they're developing a strategic plan, and we may need more language for them to just tell them to develop their strategic plan. Yeah. But we do already kind of have that in there. I mean, and they're supposed to fit in with that, and they are planning on developing a strategic plan.
I guess what I'd like to see is I'd like to maybe, again, staff can work. I'd like to see some of the language that says that the strategic plan should cover some of these items that are on R21. Because we do want to say that every local, we do want to make it abundantly clear that not every local park has the criteria to be a Greater Minnesota Regional Park, like the Metropolitan Regional Parks.
I'm sorry. So, this is, again, I guess, kind of a Senate idiosyncrasy, but needed to make a call to get things started. So, can we recess?
Yeah.